to lesson 27. Today we're going to be looking at your weapon of massive difference. And in a nutshell, really what that is volunteer power. But I want to look at it in a couple of interesting ways. First of all, I want to ask you, does your NGO have a weapon of massive difference? Is your NGO already moving, shaking, and impacting the international community massively and fulfilling the dreams, ideals, the mission that has been set before it? What I want to do is start by looking at, for some, what is the difficult truth of what is holding your NGO back and what it is that we can do about removing the obstacles, whatever that blockage is. And I want to look at what a volunteer team is really from a number of perspectives, and not just the kind of thin way that we often look at volunteers as simply people to come in and do those things that we either don't have time to do, don't really know how to do, or simply don't want to do. And I want to look at what is the cost. Now, I'm not going to go over this in terms of the dollars and cents, but in terms of what needs to be done to enable this to happen. I happen to believe, but more importantly, know from experience, that if massive success is something that you seriously want for your NGO, then you will be able to find the resources that you need to make this happen. It's not just a matter of going out and finding dollars and cents. What's more important is having the clarity, knowing what it is that you need to do, what it is that you want to do, and how to go about it. Then you can find the resources that you need when you understand what it is that you need. And we're going to go over what the steps are to getting and mobilizing volunteers. And that way, you can really begin to make a massive difference at the United Nations or within the particular community that you are working within. So let's start with the difficult question of who is holding what back. And yes, as noted before, this is most likely a difficult truth for 99% of us. These questions are not a matter of judgment, but rather for the purposes of clarification, so we can move forward clearly, precisely, purposefully. Are you satisfied with your NGO's level of success? Are you willing to take a look at what really needs to change? If you could be working less, making more headway, growing your NGO faster, then this lesson is the key to finally making the real progress that you want for your NGO, that is appropriate for your mission. You see, I believe that you are capable of greater success and increased impact. But why isn't it happening? Why aren't you making the progress that you dreamed of? And more importantly, what's it going to take? What will it take to improve this week the impact that you wish to make? So today we're going to take some of the first steps to finding a few real answers. We're not going to solve them all right now, but at least we can begin to take a few important steps that will make a measurable difference. Because I'm going to help you to face one big demon that's blocking you from the success that you desire for your NGO. Now, I wasn't quite sure of which picture to put in that mirror, but I suspect that you know. But I don't want to just look at this from the point of view of creating blame. That's not what's going on here. What we are doing here is beginning a process of making shifts and changes. Because we're going to go where we have not yet gone before, not just as individuals, but as an NGO, we're seeking to impact the United Nations in ways that we haven't ever done before. So, of course, we are not walking in familiar territory. One of the things that we need is a testing ground, a place where we can practice amongst friendlies, amongst those that we can get useful feedback. If we're very serious about moving forward, it's what needs to happen. We need synergy We need feedback. Also, when we think a little bit further down the line, we need more than one or two or even three very active experts. If we're serious about expanding the capacity of our NGO to impact our world, we need additional leaders. We need more people on board, trained, enthusiastic, clear, and active. And it is the pool of volunteers from which tomorrow's leaders come from. Or perhaps we could say more accurately, it is the pool of volunteers, those who are the unpaid workers, that in fact become the leaders of the organization in the future. So what is the benefit to the volunteers themselves? First of all, it's understood that it's almost hardwired into the human being to want to make a difference. Once basic food, shelter, and fundamentals for life are taken care of, there is something that is very innate in the human being, and that is the desire to make a difference, to contribute, to give back. And in that sense, the volunteers, the unpaid staff, are able to fulfill that in their lives. Also, especially when they're working in a place, for example, the United Nations, where they have never worked before, they're able to develop new knowledge and competencies. And this is also a satisfying and desired outcome for volunteers. The benefit for volunteers is that they grow in their commitment to their organization. This is often very important, even if their contributions are done in small pieces rather than large amounts of volunteering. Small amounts over a longer period of time is seen to be something that is very satisfying to volunteers. And this is one of their ways that they can fill long-held dreams to make a difference in the world and to become tomorrow's leaders. Now, effective volunteer teams require a number of things. They need leadership. They need coordinational management. There needs to be an understanding of that the 21st century volunteers are not 20th century volunteers. We live in a different age, a different era, and so there are different needs. Tasks need to be identified. The organization itself needs to be prepared and ready to receive and to work with the volunteers. There needs to be a recruitment, an orientation or education and retention process. And volunteers need to be valued and recognized as they do and accomplish their work. Now, in addition here, which I didn't put down, there does need to be the skill and the readiness and awareness that there can be volunteers who come on board, who in terms of their contribution and the organization's ability to continue to fulfill its mission. There are some volunteers that really shouldn't be working as volunteers with the organization. They came perhaps for the wrong reasons, or they were quickly brought into the ranks without the proper vetting. Whatever the reasons, when the tasks that are being done by volunteers and the individual who's coming to help out don't match, then volunteers do need to be released. And so all the more reason to understand that there needs to be a very clear process that is held to in the course of developing your volunteer team. It's important to track, to report, to bring back to the board or to the organization at large the contribution that is being made by the volunteer teams and the volunteers themselves. Now, what does the volunteer leader need to do? As mentioned, we need to understand the 21st century volunteer. Today, volunteers are more likely to want to make a difference rather than just to make some kind of a contribution. So part of what that means is that the volunteer leader really needs to be ready to show how that particular contribution of the volunteer is going to make the difference for the organization as a whole. But in the end, it's the quality of the partnership that is established with the volunteers, how enjoyable you make their volunteer experience, and how fulfilling it is through education and other means that will really determine how well they serve you and your organization and the length of their commitment. Living and working in a knowledge society means that individuals need to be empowered, need to be given adequate understanding, training, and education in order to be able to go out and be effective. It's not just a matter of delegating and giving them responsibility and hoping that they will figure it out and catch up with the work at hand. And this is extremely true for the UN environment when knowledge and information is such a critical and vital element of the work. So a volunteer leader needs to make sure that your NGO has a strategic plan and understands the role of the volunteer in that and ensures that the volunteer understands their role and place and contribution to the larger organization and to the NGO's overall strategy and plan and set of activities. The volunteer leader will need to choose the manager, the coordinator, very well and prepare them to do well. It's not just a matter of giving somebody a title and telling them to do the job. Again, this all needs to be done in the context of the strategic plan and overall planning of the organization. The volunteer leader needs to make sure that there is in place a whole mechanism and that it is delegated to the volunteer coordinator or the volunteer manager, to ensure that volunteers are properly recruited, interviewed, placed, educated, managed, debriefed, and recognized. Leadership of the volunteers, as well as the management or coordination of the volunteers, even if this is all being done by one person in some cases. All of these different aspects of the work need to be understood and need to be figured into the larger plan. Now, the volunteer manager or coordinator really does need to understand the process of recruiting, of interviewing and placing properly the volunteers, of educating, orienting and educating the volunteers, of managing and empowering them appropriately, of valuing, recognizing, and extending your gratitude to them. As you can see by some of the reading list below, many books have actually been written about managing volunteers and integrating them into your NGO, their role and the importance of volunteers, how to handle, recruit, interview and place, educate, manage and empower and value volunteers. I'm going to go into each of these areas just a tiny bit, but point number 4 on managing and empowering volunteers, I'm going to deal with in lessons 28 and 29. So we won't go into those details in this lesson. So I'm going to cover the other 4 points here, beginning with the 7 deadly sins of recruitment as they were articulated by Jonathan and Thomas McKee in their book, The New Breed. While I'm not going to go into each of these points in the detail that they do, it will still give you a key track to, it will still give you a track to run on in terms of getting your mind wrapped around some of the things that you do need to do as you go out to recruit volunteers. Just a quick side note here. The McKees use the phrase deadly sins of recruitment. I would perhaps more accurately call it misplaced assumptions that result in misplaced efforts and wasted time and energy. But anyway, let's go on with the shorthand of 7 deadly sins of recruitment. Putting out one call one time and expecting to get a flood of volunteers is, simply put, naive and disregarding of 21st century life, to say nothing of human psychology. If giving out an announcement doesn't get you the response, that does not mean that people don't care, they're not interested, or they're not going to do anything about it. What you need to understand is that making announcements, perhaps even up to 7 times, is what it's going to take to get people to take action, to reach the point where they are going to step up and say, yes, count on me. Sometimes listening to an announcement, they miss what was being said, or they were distracted, or it was simply the wrong moment, or they had a headache. Whatever it might be, it's not necessarily that they don't care, are uninterested, or unwilling. In our information-dense society, we need to hear things a number of times and from a few different places before we can get ourselves ready to respond. A simple announcement does not necessarily get people to get up off their rear end in that instant and to volunteer at that time. If you, in your endeavor to recruit, are asking people to virtually get married to the organization rather than to commit a certain amount of time, that is going to undo you. Just think for a moment, what is something that is most precious to you? I'm certain that your time is those things. So you'll be much better off looking for a date, a small engagement, a one-time opportunity that they can fulfill, a small contribution that then, if they like what you're doing and how they're doing it, if they feel that this is the right environment for them, and if you extend the appreciation, etc., 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 then you can get them to come back for another date. And in fact, you can make it a long-term relationship, but do so by beginning with something small. Next, if you think that no really means no, again, you are mistaken. No can mean, no, what was that you said? It can mean, no, I don't have, tomorrow, I just can't do anything tomorrow. I'd really love to, but tomorrow I'm absolutely, completely taken up. It can mean, no, I can't think of that now. I've got this pounding headache. It can mean, no, I've got something that is so urgent that I just cannot pay any attention. I cannot look left or right until next month. You come back next month and they can be absolutely ready to move and to go. No does not mean absolutely no. Next, when you're working to recruit people, you have to get others to help you. This is not just the job of one person. People often need social proof. They need encouragement. They need support from a number of different sources. Only hearing from one source, one person, one time is absolutely not going to be enough. You're going to have to broaden your scope, get other people, get partners to help you repeat and reiterate the same message. But of course, to do that, you're going to have involved other people to the point where they know what you want and they're willing to be out there and helping you bring in those other volunteers. The next sin. If you are too people-driven rather than position-driven, in other words, if you just want bodies rather than recognizing what your organization needs and how well to engage people to fulfill a certain position and role, again, you're going to get into trouble. Why? Just getting people in the door. If you cannot give them something useful and meaningful to do that time they come in the door, the chances of them walking in the door one more time, almost zero. You really need to have done your work up front to be clear about what you need and to seek to fulfill those positions and to give people a wonderful and powerful experience in that position and not just trying to get bodies in the door. Again, I'm keeping this fairly simple, but I think if you think about these things, then you can understand why some of these points can actually be so much more problematic than what I'm even letting on here. Another sin that is put out there is the use of four words that volunteers hate. Oh, by the way, would you? In other words, what that is saying is that you didn't let them know up front what you really wanted them to do, and you're trying to slide something in sideways that you were unwilling to be forthright about in the beginning. People like to know what they're getting into, especially when they're making a contribution, when they're allocating their precious time, when they are giving something of themselves to you and to the organization. So do not simply slip additional things in that were unexpected, that they weren't told about. When you hire staff who don't know how to manage volunteers, again, you're setting your organization up for problems. Not necessarily failure, but for problems. To manage people is a challenging task. Volunteers aren't always the sweetest, kindest, most humble people. They can often be very opinionated, very strong, have very short amounts of time, and therefore feel quite pressured. So, volunteer manager, the coordinator, really needs to be on top of things in order to utilize the resources, those human resources that walk in the door as volunteers. When they walk in the door, you can't just mess around with people's time. Otherwise, you really are going to be making it harder for your organization to get volunteers in the future. It is, in short, a sin. Next, do not think that just because all they have to do is manage volunteers, that they just need to tell them what to do. No. To manage volunteers is much more than that. They need to be able to educate, to guide, to troubleshoot, to anticipate problems, to be sensitive to other people, and especially to be able to protect the organization from losing its resources of time and money. Next, we're going to look at the interview. Here, I want to emphasize that you use a two-phase process of interviewing. The first step is to have a phone interview, and this allows you to filter out some of the applicants that really aren't suited to the work. It really does cut down on wasted time, energy, and money, and on aggravation. Then schedule your face-to-face interviews. Now let's run through very quickly the six steps of a face-to-face interview. Number one, establish rapport. Number two, ask questions about past performance and experience. Number three, probe to clarify. Clarify for you, clarify for them. And remember that this process of getting volunteers is not just all about the organization, it's also about the volunteers. In order to keep them coming back, they need to feel fulfilled, appreciated, valued, and to be being put in the right place for their skill set and their resources. That doesn't mean to say that a person who has a very high skill set is not going to be happy with doing some very simple task. Sometimes that's all the time that they have, and they're quite happy to come in and help where it's needed and to do something very simple. But the point is to make sure that there's a match between the intent of the volunteer and the needs of the organization, and you can only find that out by probing and clarifying because it's not always obvious at first glance. Next, allow the candidates to ask questions, to give them a chance to interview you, because after all, the interview process is, as mentioned before, a two-way street. And step five, close the interview and then review and summarize. Make sure that you take notes right at the end of the interview, because I am confident by the time you've interviewed a number of volunteers, you'll start to get them confused, even though at the moment you may not feel that you would. Make sure that you take down notes and then summarize them at the end of it. That's a very handy six-step process for the interview. Three, remember that there are three components of volunteer education, and this is what you're going to need to set your organization up to do. You've got to be able to educate your volunteers about the environment within which they're going to be working. Now, for some, if they're only going to be working in the office, this is perhaps a moot point. But for those who are going to, for example, be working in the environment of the United Nations, then clearly they need the specialized knowledge of the United Nations for them to be effective and to not put their foot in their mouth too many times. They're going to need to have knowledge of your NGO. You're going to have to articulate clearly and present the mission statement, even provide a vision statement, know the difference between the two. We're not going to go into that here. But bottom line, you're going to have to be able to then also give them resources where they can find out about the specifics of your NGO. If you have many field offices, many of the activities that are going on, ways to educate them about your NGO at large. And then thirdly, knowledge of your NGO's strategy at the United Nations. And if the environment that you're working in is not the United Nations, you still need to help the individual to understand the specific plan that they are being engaged in. For volunteers that are working at the UN, they need to know not only the specifics of their task, but the strategy, the overall background and approach that you are taking in your outreach at the United Nations, so they can think on their feet. If you only give them specific actions to do, when anything happens beyond that, they don't know how to behave. However, if you give them an understanding of your NGO strategy at the United Nations and clarify this through your corridor brief, and you can do that by doing the corridor brief exercise with them as a team activity, then they can be assured of understanding your strategy and having a sufficient knowledge base upon which to act. Now, managing and empowering your volunteers as a team, especially when they are functioning as a team, as a proper team, not just as individuals going out and doing their piece and then adding it all together and the team being a composite of all of those individual actions, but where the synergy of the people, their experiences, their thinking, their expertise is valued. This is what we're going to deal with in the next two lessons. And number five, value and recognize. Make sure that all throughout all that you do, there is genuine interaction and ongoing valuing. Gratitude needs to become part of the whole language of the organization. It can be in your NGO's approach book, showing how much you rely on volunteers. You can have special events that recognize and value the volunteers. But more than that, it can be on your website, it can be in your literature, it can be in the way you greet them on a daily basis. It can be a part of your NGO's culture, a culture of gratitude. Provide them with the special meals, volunteer appreciation meetings. But importantly, one of the ways you can show that you value your volunteers is by educating them, investing in their education. And know that this investment in education is likely, in many cases, to be an investment in the future of your NGO. Do not underestimate the value of education for your organization and for the individuals and for expanding your volunteer groups. If a person has a really profound experience and values their education and goes out into their community, will not they be the ones to bring other volunteers in to be volunteers for your organization? Even though we are in a high-tech era, never underestimate the power of word of mouth. And another way that you can value and recognize is through assessment, giving them feedback. Helpful, honest, valuable feedback and certificates. I didn't put it anywhere. Wherever possible, make their work fun. So, today's homework. First of all, I want you to imagine, what is your biggest hope for your NGO at the United Nations? What is the most that you would even dare to hope for? Forget about whether you can or cannot do it at the moment. Just think about, what is your highest goal for your work at the United Nations for your NGO? Now, write that down. Then I want you to think about what role volunteers would play in that. In this day and age where the economy is so tight, people do not necessarily back off volunteering. People still are ready to volunteer. So this is a prime time. It's a crucial time for you to create a powerful volunteer force to further the work of your NGO. Next, I want you to think, what would you include in an orientation and education plan for your volunteers? Get specific. Think about it. And even if you are not responsible for thinking about this for your NGO, does that mean there are no other places that you could utilize a team of volunteers that if you were able to pull them together, inspire them, and work with them? I'm pretty sure that you're not only dealing with one NGO or nonprofit in all of your activities in life, and developing the skills and capacities to manage, to create, and manage and retain a volunteer team is and will be valuable throughout your entire life. So use this opportunity as a mind experiment to think about what kind of resources you would need to get this off the ground, and how would you go about getting them. I look forward to seeing you in the next couple of lessons when we delve right into the nitty-gritties of what it really takes to create magnificent teams. Until then, here's to your success.